Okay, we were discussing Uraga Sutta, which is the very first sutta of Suttanipata. Suttanipata is one of the ancient book coming under the Kuddaka Nikaya, the shorter collections of the Buddha, shorter sermons of the Buddha. An interesting phenomena in this particular sutta is that Buddha again and again highlights that the one of the important factor done by the what you call these serpents, so that is letting go or shedding off of their worn out skin. So you might have seen this certain snakes, or maybe rat snake, or many other different snakes or serpents. So they time to time simply shed off the worn out skin. So this particular phenomena Buddha used as a kind of a simile to explain us Dhamma. So we also, when someone has undertaken certain kind of spiritual journey, so time to time he also has to let go of certain defilements, certain states, certain acquisitions. So likewise, it's a whole different kinds of letting go process. So therefore Buddha used this simile to highlight that, and that is what the repeated verse or repeated phenomena explained in this sutta, Uraga Sutta. And we have now reached the 13th verse. So this all sutta contains several verses, one after the other. And now we have reached the 13th verse. It is going like this. Yo nachasari na pachasari sabbang vitaka nidanti vita moho. So bhikkhu jahati ora parang urago jinnamiva kacham purana. Now, basically, some similar verses that we already discussed, and this also somewhat similar, if you can remember the previous verses, now that also very much like similar, yona chasari na pachasari sabbang vitati nidanti vita dosu. So bhikkhu jahati ora parang urago jinnam iva tacham purana. Now, in 13th verse, it is like yona chasari na pachasari sabbang vitati nidanti vita moho. So that's the main term which is different. Yeah, vita moho. And vita moho, so bhikkhu jahati ora parang urago jinnam iva tacham purana. So what it literally mean, one who has neither run too far nor run back, devoid of delusion, knowing all this is unreal, that bhikkhu gives up the here and the beyond as a serpent sheds its old worn out skin. Now basically, shedding of one's worn out skin is the one property of the serpent. So now Buddha mentioned here that one who is devoid of delusion, when one is free from delusion, so he also can simply let go of many things. So without going here and there, without running back to the past or to the future, one can simply let go of things, all the attachments, because now his mind is devoid of delusion. Now in this sense, actually we need to look at why we are holding things. So you know, I mean, basically as humans, so we are holding many things. Maybe our reputation, maybe our social status, or maybe our belongings, like say our house, maybe our car, our various other properties, our job. So whatever different things, and we may have various animate things, like say if you are a householder, then you may have your wife, your husband, say your children, your parents. So likewise, we have so much of things which we claim as mine. And are we really talking that we are letting go of all this? So that's another question that we can ask. And on the other hand, is this letting go kind of a forceful thing? That is another thing that we can ask. Actually, rather than giving direct answer, so what we are going through in a mindful setting is that we are developing certain amount of mindfulness, and with that we are developing some amount of concentration. And as much as possible, now we start to observe our very body, and we start to observe various feelings, and again our own mind, so that we are developing a different kind of a phenomena or different kind of a paradigm. So ultimately, what we hold become kind of a burden. Whatever the attachment we have, whatever the clinging we have, grasping we have, appear like kind of a burden to the mind. Now, slowly, mind will let go of the things. It doesn't mean that you are letting go of your family or letting go of your social status or something like that. Rather, while you are continuing your typical responsibilities, but still mind you can maintain free from any grasping. So this is an interesting phenomena. So how one can maintaining all the typical situations, or maintaining the social status, maintaining whatever the say family status. So how one can still free from each and everything, free from all the attachments. So in a way, it's difficult to understand from simply from the outside, because sometimes we think, okay, if we have to let go, then we have to always have to become a monk, have to become a nun. That's the way of doing it. That is also one way. But after becoming a monk, after becoming a nun, still we are holding things, then the real objective is not fulfilled. Actually, from our mind, we have to let go of all the kinds of desires, all the kinds of attachments, all the kinds of graspings. So that is the difficult part. So in order to do that, we have to develop wisdom. Actually, till we have delusion, we are prone to hold things. We are prone to grasp things. But when we are free from delusion, or when we are devoid of delusion, then the letting go process is quite natural, quite automatic. That's an interesting phenomena. Actually, that is why vipassana meditation is quite important, where one is continuing one's practice and understanding the real nature of the things, particularly the conditioned phenomena. And through that understanding, through that wisdom, now mind is readily letting go. Now mind is slowly letting go. And you don't need to push. And you don't need to even ask yourself to let go of something. But mind slowly let go of that, whatever the things, whatever the attachments. So that is where sometimes in Dhamma it is mentioned, Yatha Bhuta Jnana Dassanam Nibbidatthaya. Yeah, it means when someone know that whatever the things as they truly are. So when someone know things as they truly are, so that lead to a kind of a disenchantment. That leads to a kind of a detachment. So then letting go or relinquishment is quite natural. It is not a forceful letting go. It is not something that you are let go of with attachment. Rather, mind is now very much like incapable of holding things, incapable of grasping things. So that is the point. So how one can do that kind of a smooth letting go process? So such a smooth letting go process to happen, you need wisdom as a prerequisite. So that is why the wisdom is playing a vital role here. So that is why we have to spend a fair amount of time developing wisdom. So that's what we are trying to do through, say, different vipassana practices. So as we are continuing our practice, as we are continuing our observation or investigation, so this understanding is growing. So with this understanding, as it is growing, actually now slowly mind starts to let go. Mind slowly, naturally start to let go. So in other terms, what we can say is that till our mind is deluded, we are attached to so many things. Till we are deluded, we are attached to so many things. But when we are devoid of delusion, letting go become kind of natural. Now, I found some related two verses from Dhamma Pada. Kanhan Dhammam Vipahaya Sukhang Bhaveta Pandito. Oka anokang agamma viveke yatta durama. Tatra abhiratin icchaya hitva kame akinchano pariyodape yattanam citta klesehi pandito. Now these are very interesting two verses talking about the practice. Actually, if we simply take the face value, one can say, okay, this is talking about that once one may has let go of the household life and one has become a monk, and now that monk's life or the renunciative life is something that one has to appreciate, one has to adhere to, which is difficult to enjoy. And then you have to give up all the sensual pressures and without any attachment. And then one has to cleanse one's mind from various defilements. So this is the kind of a, say, surface kind of understanding that one can has, one can get through observing these two verses. But on the other hand, as practitioners, we can see some deeper meaning to this these two verses. Kanhan dhammam vipahaya sukham bhaveta pandito. So that basically means you have to let go of all the, what we can say, bad activities. So unwholesome deeds. Those could be through the body, through the speech, or through the mind. So whatever the unwholesome deeds or words or thoughts, as much as possible, you have to let go of. Sukham bhaveta pandito. Now you have to develop certain necessary qualities, certain necessary skills. So actually we are talking two sides. One is that we already, our minds are crowded with so much of unnecessary things. Say some gross things, which are kind of hindrances. They are the ones actually hindering the spiritual path, spiritual growth. So those hindrances that you have to let go of. And on the other hand, whatever the necessary things, whatever the useful, beneficial things that we need to develop. So letting go of the defilements, letting go of the hindrances, as well as developing the necessary qualities, necessary skills are the kind of the path or the practice. That is the training. Oka anokang agamma viveke atta durama. Now this is not merely that you become a monk or nun by renunciating the lay life, rather here, by continuing one's practice, slowly, your mind becomes fairly detached. So as I mentioned, say for example, when one develops fair amount of vipassana, some understanding is developing or insights are developing. So as a result of that, now mind slowly let go of various things. Say previously you had strong attachment to food, for example. Now you are letting go of that. Now you are managing it, or you are having a moderate meal. Suppose you had a long kind of a obsession with the various styles. Now you probably have let go of that, and now you are adorning your body just to maintain yourself. So likewise, I mean, certain behavioral changes may be happening. But other than that, there are some significant improvement in the mental side. Say your mind is now capable of maintaining mindfulness, capable of maintaining fair amount of concentration. And with that you do continuous observation, investigation, and time to time, suppose your mind become completely free, but only for a short period. Say for example, you are practicing, say, Vedanupassana, observing different kinds of feelings. And more you observe, now mind become detached from various feelings. And at a given moment, suppose mind let go of all the feelings. And there are no even thoughts in the mind. And now you are not putting your attention back to the anapanasati or any other phenomena. So very much like mind stays without associating anything. Mind stays without holding anything, without grasping anything. Very much like kind of a free mind. So this is the kind of freedom that we are talking here. Even though it is temporary, it is significant. It's a kind of a significant achievement in one's spiritual practice. So when one achieve that, interesting thing is it appear like quite lethargic. It is not eventful. Now typically we prefer events. So we like excitement, we need events. So we need various incidents, happenings. So this is how we actually feed our mind. But when the mind is released, or when the mind is temporarily freed, so that state doesn't have any of these kind of events. As a result of that, you can't enjoy it. So that is why here it is mentioned, Oka anokang agamma viveke yatta durama. Even though you are able to achieve it,
but it is quite difficult to maintain it. You don't like it, or sometimes you feel quite bored about it. So that is where we have to be quite vigilant. Tattvādi rati nicchaya, hitvā kāme akinchana. Now, somehow, you have to convince yourself, okay, this is the place I have to maintain. Now my mind has freed. Even though this freedom has no event, there is nothing to do while being there. This is something that I need to develop. This is something I have to maintain. This is something that I have to appreciate. This is something I have to cultivate. So this kind of a proper understanding is quite necessary. Because otherwise, now you may doing lot of practices, so you may do your daily routine. And once the mind is freed, if we are not giving proper emphasis to that, if we are not giving enough importance to that, enough value to that, probably we may even miss the chance. Because typically we give wrong values or imperfect values. So our value judgments are quite erroneous. Sometimes we are giving values to something which is really even harmful. But when we reach something really beneficial, but we ignore thinking it is not that useful. So this is somewhere that actually you need some external encouragement from a friend, from a spiritual friend. Then he may guide you, tell you, okay, this is something that you have already achieved. Now try to maintain that. Even though you don't have much confidence here, or even though you don't have much idea here, or you don't understand the benefits here, you got to develop it. You got to maintain it. Again and again, you have to reach that. So this understanding is quite important. This advice is quite important. Then only you start to consolidate that freedom. Otherwise, you simply even ignore that freedom. Because you have reached that freedom, but there is no event. And there is no I. There is no person. And there is no any kind of a self-promoted view there. That's why we don't want to be there. So that is why Buddha very beautifully mentioned here, Oka anokam agama. Now you were in a place, you were in a state where there are many incidents, there are many events, but now you have come to a place which is quite restful. Free from many events, free from eye making, free from mind making. And that is quite difficult to appreciate. That is why the term duramang, it's difficult to hold or difficult to appreciate. Tatsabi rating ichche, but with wisdom, you need to keep your attention more and more in that kind of a freedom. By letting go of all the different kinds of sensual desires. And now your mind has basically nothing. Mind is basically empty. So in other terms, when we reach some amount of emptiness, so we have to appreciate that state, mental state. And we have to cultivate that state. We have to dwell in that state, which is quite difficult to appreciate because it has no events. And while continuing that, you become very much like no one. You become nobody. Now you are using that state as a kind of a platform to recognize various subtle defilements. Because now you have reached a very clean state of mind, which has basically nothing, no attachments. But whenever your mind undergo any kind of an attachment, any kind of a defilement, now you can vividly see that, vividly understand that. So that is the very practical meaning of developing that kind of an emptiness in the mind. Say, once you are able to reach that kind of an emptiness or signless state or desireless state, even though at the beginning you don't feel any benefit, but more and more when one is dwelling in that area or cultivating that area, so slowly you might understand, okay, this is something I can maintain. This is something I can dwell upon. This is something I can maintain without any friction. So whenever mind undergoes any kind of attachment, grasping, then it inadvertently it may produce kind of a friction. You have some stress tension. But here, there is no tension. There can't be tension. If you are properly maintaining it, then there can't be any tension. And again, if you are properly maintaining it, so it is quite easy to recognize various defilements. So you are able to recognize various defilements, and you are able to maintain a friction-free mind, stress-free mind, quite a pure mind. So this is the kind of an advantage. That's why Buddha is trying to kind of advocate or promote or advise us, telling, okay, even though you can't understand much benefit, you just stay there, cultivate that, just dwell there. And just basically while being there, now you have to relax yourself. And then the different defilements may start to appear again and again, where the graspings can appear. Now you are going through a kind of a battle, because different defilements are there, attachments are there. And now what you are doing is pariyatana. Now you do a kind of a self-investigation. You are understanding yourself. There may be various mental patterns. There may be latent tendencies. There may be different drawbacks or shortcomings. So there may be various strengths. So these are all kind of a self-investigation. So when we are going through that kind of a self-investigation, then it is possible to understand better about ourselves. So Buddha or someone else may not come and tell us, okay, these are the things that you need to do, these are the things that you need to overcome, these are the things that you need to improve. We can't expect that kind of a thing. But we ourselves have to become our own savior. Ourselves have to become our own teacher by going through this kind of a practice. So more and more when one is going through one's insight practice, it's very much like kind of a individual development. Now you have gained some amount of skill, certain amount of practice, training, and now you have to do your own investigation. We need to recognize what are the defilements available, what are the latent tendencies available, what are the certain mental patterns available in the mind. So when you have that understanding, then you can take various corrective measures so that, say, we become more and more a person with a pure mind, a defilement-free mind, or we can say a detached mind, without grasping, without any holding, without any tension, without any stress. So likewise, so when one is developing wisdom, insight, so the letting go process become quite natural, because whenever mind go and attach, then the mindfulness will tell that or indicate that, then we can do some kind of a vipassana practice, or even when that we become mindful, slowly it may go away or the attachment may go away. So likewise, this whole process we have to continue for a long time. It is not that this one day that we need to do it or 2 days we need to do it. We have to do it for a long time, because our defilements are in a way quite abundant, and we need to work out. More and more we work out, then the defilements slowly become diluted or weakened, and ultimately one day we are able to uproot the defilement. So that is what I need to share with you today. And basically, the process of developing wisdom is the vipassana, where various insights are happening, and through that we can overcome different kinds of attachments. And that is being very much here Buddha introduced to us with the help of that particular simile, where a serpent is letting go of the worn out skin. So we also, when we understand, okay, this is not necessary, this particular attachment is not necessary, this particular grasping is not necessary, or this particular perception about a particular person is not necessary, this kind of thinking is not necessary, this kind of mental proliferation is not necessary. So when we ourselves have proper understanding of that, then we can slowly let go of that. It's a kind of a self-realization. There you investigate your own mind's operation, and there you recognize, okay, certain activities are not necessary. They sometimes harmful to the mind. they sometimes kind of a burden to the mind. They might sometimes oppress the mind. So slowly you start letting go of the whole thing. So it's kind of a, with understanding the letting go process happens. So you are quite ready to let go. So therefore it's quite interesting. So the letting go process being enforced, or letting go process being activated with the help of wisdom, then it is not kind of a stressful or that you need to let go with the with difficulties, but rather mind is quite ready to let go. So those are the things that I like to share with you today. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Hello, Sarmante. We have 5 questions today. First one is a general question. Dear Bhante, last time there were some excellent questions and answers regarding anger and how to deal with recent anger, frustration, and annoyance. One participant reflected on using breath as an escape mechanism. I also use this technique, but focus on my posture. When I notice anger, frustration, or even lust arising, I try to find a posture-related sensation on my body. As an example, the weight on the lower legs, any tucking sensations or pressure on my sitting posture. This gives me an escape mechanism not to flush away with these powerful streams of thought and take a step back. Also, it facilitates third-person observations later on. I know at some point there should be direct confrontation with these thoughts, but for the time being, I use the present moment observations as a safe haven. Appreciate Bhante's further advice on how to gradually confront what we escape and go around at the moment with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, so actually, as you have correctly mentioned, so you can use various techniques. Now, as you mentioned last time, somebody has said, so when one get anger, say I am trying to watch my breath. That is one way of handling it. Say when I am getting angry. Now even kids are telling that. Now say that's an interesting video done by one of the high schools in London. So they are teaching children mindfulness by means of a particular technique called rising and falling. But they are giving a different terminology, telling that it's the peace button. Probably you have even seen the, in Satipasal it is shown, the peace button. So they are now called peace kids. So whenever a person, a little kid gets angry, so what he needs to do is holding the two arms, two hands on top of the tummy or on top of the abdomen, and now to pay attention to the movement. So when the breathing happens, so the two hands are coming forward and going back. So that movement is what they are now trying to reflect. So ultimately anger has gone. So this is another technique. So likewise, different techniques you can employ to overcome anger. But on the other hand, when we are reaching Chittanupassana and Dhammanupassana, we are not dependent on some external activity, external technique. Rather, we are very much like confronting the anger directly. I'm getting angry. So say when anger is there, am I able to look at it directly? So this is kind of a challenging process. So for that, you need to have some previous training. Prior training is needed, because otherwise you can't do it. You get caught to anger. Suppose that you are trying to observe anger, but you are trying to, even though you are trying to observe it, you get entangled to anger, and ultimately you are pumping more strength to aggravate anger. So that is that we are getting caught by anger. But in the proper practice, so if we are gradually developing mindfulness, gradually developing say concentration and wisdom, now you are in a better position to handle anger even when it is even when you are confronting it, directly confronting it. Say for example that you are meeting someone that you don't like. Now slowly kind of a resistance or little frustration arising in your mind. Now you can even notice that. Now still it hasn't grown to a very higher level. at the very early stages, you can notice that because your mind has a lot of sensitivity, your mindfulness is fairly high. So as a result of that, you can notice this arising anger or arising frustration, arising resentment. Now you can simply notice. So once you are able to notice that, it's very much like you are detaching from the process. You are not pumping energy to that process. You are not fertilizing that process, or you are not adding anything to that process. You are not constructing based upon that process. So kind of a detachment is there. So very much like you are separating anger from yourself. So anger becomes another kind of a phenomena, and your observation mind is quite detached from that, quite separate from that. Now you can observe anger separately. As a result of that, this anger become helpless in a way. Anger become groundless, baseless. It has nowhere to get energy. Your anger can't sustain itself. Anger requires some kind of a support from our side. But when we are having kind of a detached observation, so we are not supporting it. We are not being deluded by that. As a result of that, what happens? Now anger starts to slowly fade away. So therefore, so these are different levels of our practice. At the beginning, probably you are escaping anger by watching the breath, by watching the rising and falling, or even watching your, say, the posture, whatever it is. But later, slowly you can start directly observing anger, and slowly anger may fade away. Yeah.
So, Nasa, is it okay if I ask a question on that?
Sure.
Just to understand, Nasa, so I think even the questions, they mentioned that when you're confronting someone, you will use the escapism. You know, if you're trying to talk to someone and we have this question, then you can't simply observe it. But is it okay then to actually do it later? Try to think
that. No, actually, when you are practicing, even when you are talking to a person that you don't like, for example, even that time, I mean, you may be talking, but at the same time, a separate thread is going on, watching your own self. That's a kind of interesting thing. Say you are. It's not that you do talking at one time and then later you observe whatever the anger produced because of that conversation at a later time. But rather, you are talking to that person at that very moment, you are aware that something is happening inside my mind. So why this frustration is arising? So I was talking to someone, but there was no frustration. I was quite happy. Now I am talking to another person. Now my mind has some resistance. Now my mind has little anger. Now my mind become restless. Why is that? So it's not that we do the observation at a later time, but during that very moment, if we can do that, then that is much better, because that would be the best answer or best solution, because then our practice is quite very much like electric at that very moment. So the anger or any other defilements are arising on that particular occasion, and at that particular occasion we have to do the practice as well. It's not that we are telling, okay, don't, now we'll stop for a moment. I am having anger rising in my mind. Wait a moment, I'll watch that. So I'm not doing that either. So I may be continuing the conversation. But at the same time, I am aware, there is a little bit of frustration arising. There's a little bit of restlessness arising. There's a little bit of resentment arising. So if I am able to watch like that, probably that may even fade away. Because I am not pumping it. I am not being caught up by that. And I am quite aware now this, there's a possibility, there's a kind of a potential that this is going to happen. So I am a little careful. And even when that person is telling something that you don't like, still you are a little bit careful. Because you are aware that I am already having a little bit of tension inside the mind, a little bit of restlessness inside the mind. I should not promote it. I should not aggravate that. So you are a little bit careful. You are quite handling the situation properly. I think that very moment we have to make use of.
Thank you, Bhante. We'll move on to the questions. So this is question number 2 of 6. It's mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, with your guidance, I have been practicing with this forum for more than a year now. I really like your practical approach of accepting what we have right here and now. The sitting posture seems comfortable whenever I sit down for mindfulness practice now, irrespective of my day and the mental status of dealing with the outside world. There were several reports from others as well, how relaxed and comfortable these simple things which we did not know until we came to know Bhante. Regarding this comforting, joyful feeling around our sitting and the mindfulness practice, can you please explain the next steps in its evolution? I have heard about the feeling of different comfort and joy in the scriptures and appreciate Bhante's explanation with metta. That's the end of the question.
Kamila, can you repeat the question?
Regarding this comforting, joyful feeling around our sitting and the mindfulness practice, can you explain the next steps in its evolution? I have heard about the feeling of different comfort and joy in the scriptures and appreciate Bhante's explanation.
Yeah, okay. So basically, if we are considering various levels or various joys, so actually we have to go through a little bit of practice and practice sessions or practice stages. We have to consider practice stages where, for example, say you are simply being mindful. At the beginning, suppose you are not even mindful, you are very much like mind is distracted. Now, say mind is somewhat concentrated, mind is mindful, so you have some kind of a relaxed attitude. Even that produces a little bit of joy. Now, suppose you are able to maintain your attention properly on breath for a long time. Now, that also removes all the other hindrances. Now, you are come up with another level of joy because hindrances are the ones actually remove our lightness of the mind or remove the pleasantness of the mind. But when hindrances are abandoned, at least subsided, then we have kind of a natural kind of a happiness or joy arising in the mind. So that's another level we can say. Now suppose you start practicing vipassana. Now assume that you are able to observe different phenomena and have different characteristics. Probably, joy might fade away and probably your mind get kind of a detached observation, kind of an equanimous observation. And probably you might feel, okay, this is kind of a mature kind of a level. Previously, it is true that you have kind of a blissful experiences or joyful experiences, but now it is not that joyful, not that blissful, but you are watching the things, investigating the things closely, examining things closely. But later, due to this very observation, this very examination, there could be joy arising again. And even when you understand, okay, things are quickly arising and passing away, even there are probably possibility of joy available. You are joyful by seeing arising and passing away. So that is also possible. Another level. Then assume that you are developing that wisdom for a long time. And after that, say your mind experiences a little bit of freedom. Now there is nothing to grasp. Even though at the beginning it appear like quite boring, as I mentioned today, it appear like bored. But later, as you are cultivating that, as you are being more familiarized with it, as you are consolidating that, then you get another level of joy that is more with the kind of equanimity and based on the silence, or based on the stillness of the mind. So therefore, we can say different levels of joy is there. And the name that we can give even vary. At the beginning, it may be blissful. It may be joyful. It may be even pleasurable. But later it may evolve to a kind of a mature level of happiness or contentment. And maybe even going further, you experience kind of a contented kind of equanimity. You are very much like a matured experience. Therefore, I mean, different levels of joy we can continue or call or recognize throughout the practice.
Question number 3 of 6. Dear Venerable Sir, this is a general question. Dear Venerable Sir, how do you explain fear and anxiety in terms of Dhamma and mindfulness as a solution? Just to give you the context of my question, as I reflect back my past 40 years, all my life I have been living in some sort of fear. When you think broadly, migration to Australia was due to the fear of not having a comfortable life in Sri Lanka, fear of children's education and future, fear of not being able to live freely during retirement, etc. Even today, I live under multiple fears continuously. When someone next to me in the office diagnosed with COVID, I get fear and anxiety of getting reinfected, even though I had COVID last year and triple vaccinated. It looks like migrating to a new country, moving to a better job, getting more money seems just a dressing on a wound which cannot be cured. Much merits if Venerable can explain fear and anxiety in terms of Dhamma and if mindfulness can be used practically by a newcomer in these situations with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think a quite practical question, and you are expressing your situation honestly, and I mean, it is, I mean, common to many. And I think, I mean, if we are able to confront the situation, I feel that is much better. Because wherever we go, there are various risks available. I mean, we are kind of running a risk in a way. So this, either you are in Sri Lanka, either you are in Australia, or either in any other country, there are, I mean, wherever it is, certain vulnerabilities are there, certain uncertainties are there. So we are, in one sense, we need to understand that we are in a completely imperfect world. We are in an uncertain world, kind of a vulnerable world. So this is the nature of our world. This is the nature of the sensual world, human realm. So, I mean, in order to minimize this vulnerability, in order to minimize this whatever the anxiety and whatever the problems, so we have come up with various solutions. Say you are coming up with a very strong security system, alarm system, vaccination, maybe insurance system, so etc. etc. So this is how we are trying to assure something. We are trying to save ourselves. But still, all these mechanisms sometimes fail. That's the interesting point. Even though we have, as human beings, come up with our different technological advancement and various methodologies to minimize these risks, minimize all these different vulnerabilities, but still everything can go wrong and we may again subject to various kind of, say, calamities, these kind of difficulties. So that in a way we need to accept that. So accepting that doesn't mean that we become kind of defeated or depressed. Rather, we have developed kind of a courage to even to face that. I think that is something slowly developing with the practice. So now we have talked about kind of a possibility, but in order to reach that, we have to start from the very basics. Say you are watching breath, say you are watching steps, you are watching rising and falling. I mean, we can't immediately understand what is the direct relationship between this practice and the overcoming of the anxiety, overcoming of the depression. But slowly, probably you may understand this overthinking, mental proliferation has a fair contribution towards the anxiety. So we are making things very much like overestimated, or what to say, exaggerated. So there's a little thought appear or little feeling appear, but we do internal constructions. We are doing a lot of additions to that, constructions to that. Ultimately, it becomes a huge emotion, fear, anxiety, or even can even change it to a, say, a depression as well. But at the very beginning, what we encounter is maybe a slight thought, maybe a slight doubt, maybe a little feeling. But we couldn't handle it. We were not aware of it, but we started to pump onto it. We started giving more prominence to it. And ultimately, it became a kind of a huge emotion, and ultimately we become overwhelmed by that. So that is where the practice actually giving a different kind of a solution. So more you become mindful, you are slowly capable of understanding the early stages of these feelings, early stages of these emotions. Now fear is a kind of an emotion we all may share, even as human beings, as animals. But before it reaches the kind of an unbearable level, if we are able to recognize the causing factors or causing feelings, or our own additions, our own constructions, and unnecessarily how we are, adding various other uncertainties, how we are confusing things, or how we ourselves aggravate things. So if we are able to understand them, then probably we can minimize that part. So the situation may be only a little risky thing, only a little vulnerable thing, but our own additions, our own constructions, our own presumptions, so that if we can overcome, then we can simply keep the situation as it is, without our own value judgments. I think that ability is what the practice is giving us. It is not that every time we may come across, or everyone who is praising us, everyone is favorable to us, every situation is favorable to us, we can't come across that. I mean, this world is always going up and down. But when we are going through that, is it possible to have kind of a, say, situation made, I mean, developed in the mind, which we can bear things, which we can cope up with things, or we can go through various challenges. So that ability slowly develops as we continue the practice. It is not merely with the mindfulness, say, as we develop mindfulness, slowly we are incorporating clear comprehension, incorporating wisdom, incorporating concentration. So likewise, and even equanimity and, say, patience. So likewise, many, a combination of so many spiritual qualities that we are talking here. So as we are growing like that, then probably we can cope up even the difficult situations, and we can recognize our own additions. And most importantly, we can recognize these, whatever the feelings, emotions at their very early stages. So they don't get the chance to overpower us, overwhelm us. So that is where I think practice is really helpful.
Question number 4 of 7. This is a Dhamma Sermon question. Dear Venerable Sir, what does Sanyojana mean? What are they? Could you please give an example and explain? Much merits. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think we discussed Sanyojana at another session. Actually, there are 10 Sanyojanas, 10 what you call as the fetters. And the literal meaning is that through Sanyojanas, we are being bound. We can call to the samsara, we can say. We are being, all the beings are bound to samsara based on these bondages. There are 10 in numbers. And the 3 fetters that we are talking, Sakkayaditti, Vichikiccha, Silabbada, Paramasa. Sakkayaditti is the self-view or self-identification. Vichikiccha is the doubt. Silabbada Paramasa is where we think that different kinds of rituals may give us freedom or bring us kind of a liberation. So those kinds of wrong views. So these are the things or 3 fetters that is mentioned when one accomplish or when one reaches the stream entry, so that one can overcome them. And the other 2, say Kamaraga Patiga, and that is the sensual desire, and the what you call the anger. So these 2 actually being fairly diluted at the second stage. And at the third stage, that is the anagami level, non-returner level, one can completely uproot
that kamaraga patika, those two fetters, two samyojanas. And there are remaining other five fetters, and the previous five actually we call as the orambhagya samyojana, where you are being bound to the lower realms, and the upper five, what we call as the uddambhagya samyojana, so they are the ones being binding you to the other higher realms, like say rupavachara brahma realms, arupavachara brahma realms. So to them you are being bound based on these upper fetters. So those are only eliminated when one becomes an arahant. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 7 is again a Dhamma Sraman question. Bhante, you spoke about unassociated mind. This is where I am by default. Now, when I have to read stuff related to office documentation, etc., I'm getting a bit agitated inside. Bhante, could you please advise with metta? That's the end of the question.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So, I mean, it can happen because we are doing something, closely observing something, we are reading something. Now, suppose you are reading an email, or you are answering a question, or say you are writing a particular document. So there we get fairly involved in that activity. So ultimately, you probably, after finishing that, probably you might understand, okay, a little bit of tension being developed in the mind. Because you are fairly involved there. So you have lost your balance. You are doing it, but you have lost the balance. You are fully involved in that activity. And unfortunately, the mind was a little stressed. So then actually, once you notice that, you have to do a little bit of practice. Maybe a slight walking, and you can free whatever the tensions available. So that's why now you need to do the practice as well as you need to do the work as well. So once you go to work, true that you may go through different events, maybe different incidents, maybe even arguments or whatever the things. And with that, you get a little bit of tension, get some amount of friction. Now assume that you are coming back home. Now you watch the mind. Now you are having your free time. Now this is your practice time. Now you can watch what has happened. What are the thoughts appearing? What are the different kinds of, images appearing in the mind? Am I still thinking about the argument happened at my office? Am I still thinking kind of an incident happened on the way while coming back, or while I was at the whole station? So, I mean, different things may be again and again appearing in the mind. So that is where we need to do the purification. So we now understand, we now notice that certain hindrances are there, certain impurities are there, certain tensions are there. Now it's a matter of slowly letting go of them. It may take time. So, I mean, we can't immediately have a completely purified mind. So while we are going through various activities, various incidents, certainly again and again mind may get deluded, or mind may get defiled. But as we are continuing the purification process, probably the amount of delusion, amount of defilements or impurities happening in the mind become less and less. Suppose previously it took, after coming back home, assume that you spent 3 hours to calm down, because there are a lot of activities happen while you are at the office, at the train, or different things. So many tensions are there, many defilements are there. So for you to calm down, it became 3 hours. But later, within 2 hours, you can calm down. Maybe another time, after some more time, say within 1 hour, you can calm down. You can come to a more relaxed state of mind. So likewise, the growth is happening slowly, so it's a matter of continuing the practice.
Question number 6 of 7 is again a Dhamma Sraman question. Dear Bhante, regarding the Dhamma Sraman today, Bhante mentioned that with wisdom, letting go happens naturally. Is this something happening in the subconscious mind? I tend to understand that we might get some indications about it, but most of the time, it happens without us being aware of it. Appreciate Bhante's clarification with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I also think so, because our practice is fairly impactful or have a great influence to the subconscious. I mean, these terms, so conscious level, subconscious level, these are the new terminologies which is coming from the Western psychology. But anyway, so assume that you are developing mindfulness, with that you are developing a fair amount of concentration, and with that you are doing investigation, which is also happening at the subconscious level. You are not talking at that time, you are not thinking at that time, but you do a very silent observation, mindful observation, and that actually has an impact on the subconscious level. So even though you say don't know, but now mind already has let go of. So the letting go has already happened. Now you don't need to force yourself, because mind already have done that, something like that. So I can agree with you. Therefore, the practice has a kind of impact on the subconscious level. So letting go becomes then quite natural.
Question number 7 of 7. This is again a Dhamma 7 question. Thank you, Bhante, for your valuable explanations and guidance. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. The question is, when Bhante refers to acquiring of wisdom, is this through direct bhavana experience and investigation, or listening and reading to various aspects of the Dhamma, like Paticchasamuppada, Four Noble Truths, etc.? Thank you, Bhante. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think there are all we can consider. So Buddha mentioned that if you consider wisdom, there are many components. So Sutame Jnana, Chintame Jnana, Bhavaname Jnana. Sutame Jnana is what you are gaining through the reading and listening. And then the Chintame Jnana is what you do various contemplations, say after you listen, say you do various reflections. And even after the practice, you do little amount of reflections. So that is again producing some amount of wisdom. And most important part is the direct experience, and the direct experience based wisdom. So that is what called as the experiential wisdom, experiential knowledge. So that is most important. So I think every component has a fair amount of contribution. Say that's why we need to study Buddha's teaching. Some deep insights. So those are very valuable. And when we are reading them, and when we are trying to understand them, and again our understanding or our insights and Buddha's teaching, when they are somewhat matching, and if Buddha has mentioned something more, probably we can understand that as well. So all these are actually contributing. So I therefore can't say it's only the experiential knowledge, but a significant amount is coming from Sutame Jnana as well as the Chintame Jnana. But those two alone also can't do, because you need some direct experience as well. That's why you need to develop mindfulness, concentration, and ultimately the insight practice. So that is contributing more, and that can be further enhanced and reinforced, endorsed with the teaching of the Buddha.
We have come to the end of the written questions, but I think Gayani raised hand to ask a question related to a previous question. Do we have a few minutes, Bhante, to take that question?
Fine.
Yeah, Gayani, you can unmute and ask the question.
Avsarai Bhante, do you hear me,
yeah.
Chamila?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Swami Nahansa, this is with regards to the question I asked before. The unattached mind, the question with regards to the unattached mind.
Right.
So the question is, I know that you said how to overcome that after... after you experience that, but the question I have is, let me say it in Sinhalese, probably it's easy. දැන් ස්වභාවිකව ඉන්නකොට සාමාන්‍යයෙන් කිසිම දෙයක් නැතුව එදා දවසේ වැඩ කරන්න ගියාට පස්සේ දැන් මොනා හරි කියවන්න එනකොට කලින්ම තේරෙනවා ලයික් ඒ කියන්නේ මේ අකමැත්තක්. ඒ කියන්නේ දැන් මේ පිරිසිදුව තියෙන එකට පිරිසිදුව තියෙන සිතට මේක අපිරිසිදු වෙනවා කියලා තේරෙනවා. ඒ කියන්නේ දැන් ස්වභාවිකව ඉන්නෝ දැන් අපි හිතමු උදේ 8ට 9ට විතර මොනක්වත් නැහැ ඔළුවේ. එතකොට දැන් මොනා හරි දෙයක් ඔෆිස් එකේ දෙයක් හරි ඔෆිස් එකට ගිහිල්ලා නෙවෙයි ගෙදර ඉඳන් වැඩ කරත් දෙයක් මොනා හරි මේ ඇරලා කියවන්න වෙනකොට නිකන් ලෝකයක් හැදෙනවා. ඒ කියන්නේ ඒ හැදෙන ලෝකේ ඒ කියන්නේ ඒ පුද්ගලයෙක් ගැනවත් දෙයක් ගැනවත් අකමැත්තක් නෙවෙයි ඒ අයෝ මේ ලෝකයක් ආයි හැදෙනවනේ කියන එක ගැන
පොඩි අකමැත්තක් තියෙනවා.
අන්න හරි එහෙමයි සයින්.
හොඳයි ඉතින් ඒක කමක් නැහැ ඉතින් එහෙම තමයි ඉතින් යන්න වෙන්නේ. මොකද අපි ජීවත් වෙන්නත් ඕනේ. අනිත් එක ඕක හරහාත් අපි තාම තේරුම් ගන්න එක දෙයක් තියෙනවා. මොකද මේ තාමත් මේ වයසක ඉඳද්දි මගේ හිත තාමත් අපිරිසුදු වෙනවා. කියන්නේ මගේ පිරිසුදු බව තාම හොඳට නිකන් පළපදියම් වෙලා නැහැ. මගේ පිරිසුදු බව තාම සීසන් වෙලා නැහැ. මේ පොඩි දෙයකටත් මගේ හිතේ තියෙන මේ පිරිසුදු බවට හානි කරන්න පුළුවන්. හරි ෆ්‍රැජයිල් කියලා අන්න අපිටම තේරෙනවා මේක තව හදන්න ඕනේ නේද? මේක තව වෙන ශක්තිමත් කරන්න ඕනේ. දැන් හිතන්න අපි එහෙම නෙමෙයි අපි දුමු අපි ඔන්න ගිහිල්ලා කෙනෙක් අපිට ඔන්න බැනවා දිනවා. එතකොට කොහොමත් ඉතින් අපේ හිත අපිරිසුදු වෙනවනේ. දැන් අපිව නිග්ලෙක්ට් කරනවා. කොහොමත් අපේ හිත අපිරිසුදු වෙනවා. ඉතින් එතකොටත් අපිට පුළුවන් නම් තේරුම් ගන්න තාමත් මේ හිතේ මේ මම පවත්වගෙන ආපු පිරිසුදු බව හොඳටම තහවුරු වෙච්ච නැත්තම් ස්ථායී පිරිසුදු බවක් නෙමෙයි ස්ථිර පිරිසුදු බවක් නෙමෙයි. මේකත් තාම කැඩෙනවා බිඳෙනවා. ඉතින් එතකොට අපි තේරුම් ගන්න පුළුවන් එකwidehatකින් මගේ මේ ප්‍රැක්ටිස් එක තාම දුර්වලයි. මම මේ ලබාගෙන තියෙන ප්‍රතිඵලය තාම කැඩෙනවා බිඳිනවා. තාම මේක හොඳට තහවුරු වෙලා නැහැ. කියලා එන්න එහෙමනම් තව ටිකක් මේක ශක්තිමත් වෙන්නම තමයි තියෙන්නේ. ඒ නිසා මේ දැන් මට මතකයි දැන් මම ඒ කාලේ ඒ කියන්නේ මේ භවනා කරන්න පටන් ගත්ත දවස්වල ඒ කියන්නේ අපි දැන් කලින් මං ආරන් ඉන්නකොට ඒ කියන්නේ මම එන්නේ සති දෙකකට සැරයක් සමහරලාවට පහලට එන්නේ පිරිස ඇසුරු කරන්න එන්නේ. හැබැයි එදා ඒක ඇති මගේ හිතේ තිබිච්ච සාමය නැති කළා දාන. ඉතින් ආයෙත් දවස් ගානක් දඟලන්න ඕනේ ආයෙත් තිබිච්ච තත්ත්වයට ගන්න. ඉතින් එතකොට අපි තේරුම් ගන්න තියෙන්නේ මේ ඒ අපේ හිතේ ඇති වෙනේ පිරිසුදු බව තාම හරි දුර්වලයි. පොඩි දේවල් වෙනුත් ඒක කැඩලා බිඳලා යනවා. හැබැයි ඒක පස්සේ ඒකේ අර ඔරොත්තු දෙන ශක්තිය හැදෙන්න ගන්නවා. එතකොට ඉතින් අනිත් කෙනෙක් බැන්නත් අනිත් කෙනෙක් රැව්වත් අනිත් කෙනෙක් අපිව නිග්ලෙක්ට් කරත් ඒ මොනා කළත් ඒ හිත නිකන් අර අකම්පිතව තියෙන ගතියක් නොසෙල්වී තියෙන ගතියක් ඒ පිරිසුදු බව රැකෙන ගතියක් ඒක නිකන් පොඩ්ඩක් දැනෙන්න ගන්නවා. අනිත් අය අපිට බලාපොරොත්තු වෙන්න බෑනේ අනිත් අය මේ මට හැමතිස්සෙම ප්‍රශංසාම කරාවි මට හැමතිස්සෙම රෙස්පෙක්ට් කරාවි එහෙම බලාපොරොත්තු වෙන්න බෑනේ. ඒකට මේ හැලහැප්පීම් හරහා යෑම තුලින්ම තමයි අපේ හිත නිකන් සීසන් වෙලා එන්නේ. අපේ හිතේ ඒ ඒ කියන්නේ ප්‍රශ්න හරහා යෑම තුලින්මයි අපි තුලට නිකන් ලොකු පන්නරයක් ඇති වෙන්නේ. ඒ නිසා මම නම් හිතන්නේ ගැටලුවක් නැහැ. ඔබ තේරුම් ගැනීම වැදගත්. තාම මේකේ පොඩි රෙසිස්ටන්ස් එකක් තියෙනවා. මේවා දැන් ඇතුලට දාගන්න රෙසිස්ටන්ස් එකක් තියෙනවා. කමක් නැහැ. ඔය අනිත් පැත්තෙන් අපිට හිතන්න පුළුවන් මේක දාගත්තත් ඇයි මට ක්වික්ලි රිකවර් වෙන්න බැරි? අර රෙසිලියන්ස් කියලා අපි කතා කරන්නේ. ඒ රෙසිලියන්ස් කියලා කියන්නේ එතකොට මේ ඊවන් දෝ වී කම් අක්‍රොස් කයින්ඩ් ඔෆ් අ ප්‍රොබ්ලම් and even though the mind collapse we can quickly recover so anney quality ka thamai what we are trying to develop so slowly it may improve that's why I mentioned in the previous example so previous occasion probably you might have spent 3 hours to recover maybe later time you are maybe spending only 2 hours to recover maybe later just 1 hour to recover probably same amount of problems you might have gone through but now you can quickly recover so this quick recovery is one attribute that indicates that we are growing. Resilience is one indication to show us that we are growing.
Hope Gayani that answered your question. So that is the end of the questions for today. So we would like to close the program now. To end the program, I would like, going a bit over time as well. So to end the program, I would like to first thank Bante for this valuable time and answering all our questions. Also, thank you to all the supporters of this program, both seen and unseen, and the participants for sending through their questions and discussing as we did today. And thank you for joining today. Teruvan Saranai. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Teruvan Saranai. Teruvan Saranai.